The Missouri General Assembly is halfway through its session. So what does it have to show for it? From KCUR 89.3, this is Statehouse Blend Missouri. I'm Brian Ellison. This week, the Missouri General Assembly took the week off. It was their spring break at the halfway point of their session. We're using this week to give a bit of a midterm progress report here on the podcast. And joining me for that project are two other reporters who, like me, cover Missouri politics from the safety of our own newsrooms. Here in the KCUR production studio, lead political reporter for the Kansas City Star, Brian Lowry. Hi, Brian.
Thanks for having me.
And joining us by Skype from his home, St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum. And you may hear some additional sounds joining us for the second time on the podcast, Jason's son. Jason, welcome.
Thanks for having me. And I'm not emulating the BBC reporter and pushing my son away. He's playing pretty peacefully in the background until my wife gets home. So,
well, I trust that just as with the BBC reporter, there will be a number of write-ups across the internet reflecting on your treatment of your son here on the podcast.
Very much so. I'm really hoping that journalists take the time to do that. It's totally a great use of their resources.
If only on the podcast we could capture your wife running into the room to take your son away.
I don't think so.
Probably not going to happen. Okay. Well, so we're 12 weeks into the session. Republican supermajorities, Republican in the governor's mansion, a flurry of activity in the opening weeks, a long agenda of campaign promises. My question to both of you to start is, has the session lived up to its billing so far as an important time of bringing real change to Missouri? Brian Lowry?
I would say not really. Right now, the things that have passed have been the things that there was, you know, it didn't matter who was in the governor's office. These were things that were going to pass, things like right to work, and that's now, Greitens gets to put that as one of his major accomplishments. Really, any Republican who got in there was going to get to sign that bill. But some of the governor's personal agenda items, you know, that he campaigned on, ethics reform, those things are not moving as quickly.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that and try to figure out why some of those have stalled. Jason Rosenbaum, do you think the session has lived up to its billing so far?
It's too early to say, really. There aren't a lot of legislative sessions where the majority of big ticket priorities pass before the first half ends. The fact that right to work did pass so quickly was not surprising. As Brian mentioned, it didn't really matter who was governor. As long as it was a Republican one, that was going to pass and pass quickly. As far as the ethics reform, quote unquote, things, I think that always had kind of a tenuous path to being passed because a lot of legislators don't believe that curtailing lobbyist freebies or extending the revolving door really amounts to actual ethics reform, possibly because there are larger things that can be done in the campaign finance nexus, so to speak. And there's also kind of a disagreement that the things that are being targeted really were the rationales why lawmakers were resigning due to bad behavior. After all, the reason why ethics reform gained so much attention was because lawmakers in Missouri resigned due to their own terrible choices, essentially, due to their own sexual behavior.
Right. Misconduct or harassment of various kinds.
I think that often gets overshadowed that I don't think that, for example, John Deal had to resign because lobbyist gifts made him have an inappropriate relationship with an intern. That was his own fault, essentially. So I think that there always has been that tension among lawmakers that the things that they're talking about really don't have anything to do with why ethics reform is being talked to in the first place. And they may still end up passing because it's still a big priority of the Republican governor, but it's going to have some pushback.
Yeah, I mean, it is a big priority. It was part of the campaign, one of the things that Eric Greitens mentioned at every stop. And yet, the lobbyist gift ban, which passed with a great deal of flourish in the House in the first week after the inauguration, has pretty much stalled out in the Senate at the moment.
Yes, it has. And that's not surprising because it stalled out in the Senate last year when there was still a lot of momentum to pass it. And, you know, senators have their philosophical objections, but It happens to be that a lot of senators from both parties take a lot of lobbyist gifts, and it's part of the reality in Jefferson City.
My colleague Jason Hancock also had an analysis that ran in the paper recently about how the controversy surrounding Greitens and dark money has complicated this. You know, yeah. Senators are a little bit less likely to pass a ban on them getting a free cocktail or steak dinner when the governor is getting supported by undisclosed donors. You know, it's while these may not be identical issues, it's certainly in that broader sphere of ethics reform. And I think as Jason hinted at earlier, I mean, I think there's some people who think if you really wanted to clean up politics, the campaign funding is where you really take the look.
Well, let me ask you, Brian, the idea that that Governor Greitens campaigned against corrupt career politicians, that's the language that he used over right. and over again. Has he lost credibility by the way he's conducted himself in office in the first 2 months?
Well, I mean, the two major things were he was not disclosing the donors to the inauguration, and now we know that there is this a new Missouri. It's a nonprofit group that is going to be supporting the governor's agenda, undisclosed donors. I'll stop short of saying whether he's lost credibility, but I will say that it at least brings his credibility on the issue into question.
So there are quite a few pieces of legislation that we've talked about on the podcast that we've been following that have not yet come to be. They've had hearings and committees. They seem to be in process. They may or may not emerge as law. Let's talk about what a few of those are and the key ones that you guys are watching. One that you reported on this week, Jason, is charter school expansion, which seems to be working its way ever so slowly through the General Assembly over to the Senate this week.
It is moving slowly because if you looked at the vote count on that in the House, it only passed by a couple of votes. And for context, Republicans have 117 seats in the Missouri House. So that meant that a lot of Republicans voted against this. The bill is a little bit complicated, but from reading the perfected bill, which is the bill that passed out of the House, it would have basically allowed charter schools to be set up in districts where there's a building with test scores that are underperforming. I'm paraphrasing that a little bit, but I think that the angst about this bill comes from rural legislators. From what I've heard, from talking with both Republicans and Democrats on this issue, rural superintendents and rural school administrators hold a lot of sway in their particular necks of the woods. And a lot of rural educators do not like the idea of charter schools operating in their spheres of educational influence. They see charter schools as parasitic, bad entities that compete with public schools.
Which is pretty much how the liberal, democratic, progressive superintendents in urban areas see them as well.
Well, and that's the interesting thing, because we just had a mayoral election in St. Louis, and the winner of that Democratic primary, Lyda Crewson, has spoke very favorably about charter schools and has talked about charter schools as a means of keeping children are parents of young children in the city. Now, that is not that is certainly not a view that is held by a lot of Democrats in the legislature. It's not a view that's really held by everybody in the Democratic Party in St. Louis, because there is a feeling that the mindset of charter schools has a self-segregating aspect to it, both racially and economically. But it is a real position that a lot of Democrats in St. Louis hold, and it's kind of why some Democratic legislators from St. Louis in the House were having trouble with that bill. That's a lot of background, but the point is that even though this passes past the House, it's going to have, I think, a challenging path of getting out of the Senate, because both Democrats in the Senate will probably oppose it, and you may have some Republicans in rural districts that have misgivings about it as well.
Rural schools are really, they're the pillar of these communities. Mm-hmm. I mean, communities that don't have a lot of institutions, the school district is always one of those centralizing institutions. That's why whenever you see talk about you know, collapsing school districts into each other to save money. That's why it always gets people up in arms. And so things like charter schools that would divert students away from those rural school districts, they do put people on the defensive.
Well, interesting to see how that intersects and what kind of pressure the governor's office applies to, having lifted up school choice, and that's usually the terminology of choice there, as a key value of his legislative agenda for this year. Another key issue that takes the form of many different bills is the relationship between big business and labor. In Missouri already, we've mentioned right to work. There's other bills coming through the process, the so-called Paycheck Protection Bill, the prevailing wage bill on the agenda. Lobbying groups and consumer groups are already taking their case to the people, including this ad that's running on social media. It's an ad that features tape from Governor Greitens' campaign commercials, the ones where he's shooting big guns and looking around and smiling and laughing about it. Let's take a little listen to this.
My name is Eric Phillippe. I'm a veteran, a carpenter, and a father. When Eric Greitens said he was going to change politics as usual, folks like me didn't think the first thing he'd do as governor was take dead aim at our jobs and our families' livelihoods by working to repeal prevailing wage. Call Governor Greitens. Tell him to protect prevailing wage and to protect my family, not destroy it.
All right. So some of Governor Greitens' own ammunition, if you will, being used against him, as he supports legislation that is seen by many as anti-union, Brian.
Well, I think that's one of the big themes of the session so far, and it will continue to be, is that labor unions are having a rough go of it this session.
Yeah,
the Chamber of Commerce is having one of its best sessions ever. You know, they're getting their agenda passed, and there's really not much either private sector or public sector unions can do to block that. And so this is kind of their best option, is to try and get some public backlash, try and rally some public support, because they're not going to necessarily find it in the legislature. I don't think it's going to sway Eric Greitens, though. I think Greitens, who has his eyes on probably national office at some point. You notice when he signed Right to Work, he was going on Fox News and other places to celebrate it. I think he would like to get a few more of these policies, these that are seen as business friendly. Get a few more of them on his books, and maybe do a few more victory rounds on Fox News.
But Jason Rosenbaum, as you look around the state and the kind of core support for Republicans, characters, figures like the one in that advertisement, you know, a veteran, a union guy, he's standing there with his family, he presents himself there as sort of a blue-collar worker. Aren't these folks who will be swayed by a message that says, hey, this Republican policy initiative is hurting my family?
Maybe, but I think you got to ask yourself, where were these people during the election? I mean, it was not a secret by any means that Eric Greitens was going to sign bills like Right to Work or be in favor of legislation like curtailing the prevailing wage or quote unquote paycheck protection. In fact, I've heard anecdotes from union leaders and even some lay union members that they knew people that ended up voting for Eric Greitens and Donald Trump, even though their views on labor unions were pretty much out there. So it's part of two questions there. Did organized labor groups do enough during the campaign to educate their members or educate organized labor people about Eric Greitens' positions on this? Were they even paying close attention by reading his policy positions in traditional mainstream news outlets? And I think the answer to both of those things is probably no. Obviously, when Donald Trump wins the state by 18 or 19 points, that's a hard hill to go over. And that's going to – maybe Chris Koster would have lost anyways. But, you know, you have to give some – there has to be some accountability measures towards organized labor that they didn't do – a robust enough job warning people about this when it actually mattered. And I think that even when you talk to some organized labor leaders, I think they acknowledge that they there could have been a better strategy there, even if it would have come up short because of the presidential race.
Well, I mean, and it occurred to me during the right to work debate that, yes, there's a strategic question of how well the unions sort of did their job of advocacy. But I think there's also a power question, that just the extent to which, as an institution, as a political force, labor is just not what it once was, particularly in a red-leaning state, which is what Missouri is now. I'm just not sure they have the influence to really affect any change.
One thing Jason got at there is, there used to be a time when unions could guarantee almost that their members were going to vote the way that the union endorsed. That's really not the case anymore.
Well, and I'm not even sure they have that power in the Democratic primaries, the Democratic
right,
party. Anyway.
Right, right. And I mean, the point is that you do have a lot of guys who may belong to the union, who may belong to a union, who did cast a ballot for Eric Greitens. Mm-hmm. And the question is whether those guys have buyer's remorse or not. Maybe they like other things that he's done.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see if any of them start saying that publicly, that they do. And maybe the same could be asked of support for President Trump. We should mention that Jason Rosenbaum is speaking with us by Skype, in keeping with the terms of agreement of Skype, and that Brian Lowry is speaking with us live, sitting right here at a microphone.
In keeping the terms of the agreement between you and me.
Yes, and I appreciate your agreement. Can we talk about Governor Greitens and what kind of term he's having in his first coming up on 3 months now in office? It's been sort of a curiosity to a lot of reporters, and I want to be cautious that we don't just talk about things that matter more to reporters than they do to the general public. But it's been noted that he doesn't have many press conferences. There's been a lot of question over who's paying for his travel back and forth to Washington, D.C., which he doesn't want to disclose. As we tape this, he is in D.C., mm-hmm. Meeting with President Trump, we're told today. This is his fourth trip to D.C., at least, in the last 2 months. As you reported, right. Brian, is there a story here?
Right. He has meetings, I guess, on Sunday and then Monday with Trump and other federal officials, including the Secretary of Agriculture. So we assume they will talk about ag policy, but his office has not really been clear on what the topics of discussion with the president are, other than they have to do with Missouri's priorities. I think one thing here is that Greitens clearly has his sights on bigger ambitions, and that doesn't mean that this is what that meeting's about. But he's become a national figure very quickly, pretty much from the outset of his governorship. He has become a national figure, and I think that actually explains why he does some of the things that, you know, irk Missouri political reporters. And just to clarify, it may seem to be a bit of a petty media grievance to complain that the governor isn't having many press conferences, but the idea there is that's the opportunity for him to actually answer why he's making certain decisions. Why he may sign a certain bill, why he has these certain budget priorities. He's not made himself too available for that. And when reporters try to greet him in the hall, they'll be told to schedule an interview. I think some of them have attempted, and those interviews never seem to be scheduled. Usually aides get in between them. That's not to say that the governor isn't communicating. He's just chosen a different way to communicate, and that's Facebook. He is very active on Facebook, and when you look at his Facebook page, he's curated this image for himself that I see a lot of Missourians on there commenting and thanking him, and it seems to be a pretty effective strategy. He has the photos of him working out there with the National Guard. He'll post videos with his wife and his young son, in which he announced that he's going to extend parental leave to executive branch employees. And obviously parental leave was an issue that had some traction at the start of the session. We still need to see if there's a larger bill that gets passed. He puts out his policy announcements on there. That's his main mode of communication. And I talked to some Republican strategists about this. I've got a story that's, I think it's going to run Monday in the Star. This is his way to talk, get his message out there, and he doesn't have to face any pushback. And one thing, us in the media, we have to be honest, a lot of us have reported what he's posted on there.
Mm-hmm.
So if
there's nothing else to report.
Exactly. But if he can get his message out there and he doesn't actually have to interact with us and he doesn't have to actually face tough questions, maybe there's less incentive for him to do that.
You say it's effective, but I have to say that workout photos on Facebook simply make me feel inadequate about my own personal fitness, and therefore I don't know how effective that is. Jason Rosenbaum, is this the way of the future? And can we really say it's effective? I mean, it is reaching people.
I don't know if it's the way of the future. It's only been, 2.5 months since he got in office.
Right.
And I'm not really sure that his communication strategy now is going to be his communication strategy in 1, 2, 3, 4 years. He's never been in elected office before. A lot of his staff, are kind of doing his media strategy similar to the way he did his campaign, with a lot of emphasis on social media, as Brian mentioned. I will say, and I've said this on other shows that I've been on and on Twitter, I do think that the governor should make himself available at events where he's at to talk to reporters about on and off topic questions. Governor Nixon did that. Governor Matt Blunt, who's a Republican, did that. And I think that that's a way to, first of all, allow reporters to get the governor's side of stories that they're working on. And if you look at a lot of stories right now that involve the governor over the last couple of months, you often see that his office didn't return a comment or Greitens isn't a part of it.
Right. Jason Hancock jokes that he's programmed a key on his computer to just say Greitens' office did not respond for a request to comment.
I don't think that's helpful to the governor or his staff to not get their say in a story where the governor is the central figure. I think that ultimately that's going to come back as a negative for him. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if as they get their bearings and they figure out a way of how to kind of interact with the media, that the communication gets more robust over time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have gotten a couple of emails back from his press secretary more quickly than in the past. There was an article in the News Leader talking about his press strategy, and just as full disclosure, I'm one of the reporters that was mentioned who's been able to interview the governor on a couple of things, and that has happened. I've asked him to talk to the governor about a story regarding the cemetery vandalism in St. Louis. His staff was very prompt, and I was able to talk with the governor over the phone about it.
But that wasn't a policy story. It was a story that advanced a certain image of the governor, right?
Yeah, potentially, but it was also a story about a major news event that occurred in St. Louis where the governor was involved.
Yeah.
Obviously it's different from policy, and I think that the governor, as I just mentioned, should make himself available to talk about the decisions that he makes, because it's important from an accountability standpoint, and it's also important from a fairness standpoint that he's able to at least provide his take on things. So I think that he should do as much as possible. Whether that happens, I think, remains to be seen. But I'm not willing to just say that he's going to take this tactic for the next 1, 2, 3, 4 years. He may change.
One thing that's worth noting is that it's not just the media who has struggled to get FaceTime with Greitens. Kansas City Mayor Sly James, although they finally did meet this month, spent the first 2 months of Greitens' office very desperately trying to set up time to sit down, time to talk about Kansas City's priorities. It took a story by the Star to kind of get that meeting set up. And then you also look at some of his interactions with lawmakers. There's, I think, the very famous quote, which I think has been discussed on your show, when he sat lawmakers down to discourage the pay raise.
I can see in your eyes that you're afraid of me or something.
Was
like
it beady
that.
Little yeah, eyes beady or something eyes, like that? So I think the key is that Greitens' style is maybe he's relying less on that, what you would considered old school style politics, which is let me build relationships with the State House press corps, let me build relationships with the mayors and the lawmakers. And I guess one of the questions that we have, because he's only 3 months in, is, you know, does he develop that over time, or is this the long haul? One of the questions is, what are Eric Greitens' goals? If his goals are to get his policy agenda through in Missouri, well, then you have incentive to talk to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch or the Kansas City Star, KCUR, or St. Louis Public Radio. Give everybody a plug there.
Absolutely. We appreciate that.
And you also have incentive to build relationships with lawmakers. Right. But if his incentive is to go on to the national stage, maybe you don't prioritize those relationships as much. Maybe you kind of regard them with a little bit of wariness because you don't want to have a gaffe and you don't want to have something that will set you back.
Well, for whatever it's worth, I've said it on the show before, I've said it again, I think Governor Greitens is very good at navigating press questions when he chooses to do it. I think he's very responsive. I think he handles the questions that range from hostile to supportive very well. I think it would serve his agenda well to speak more frequently to the press if that's what his agenda is, which I think is the point you're making, Brian. I think you're right. I will also say, and I've said this on the show before as well, standing invitation. We would welcome Governor Greitens anytime here on State House Blend, Missouri.
I think the greatest thing would be if the Kansas show and Missouri show could get a Greitens Brownback on together.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, that would be the journalistic coup of the century. Jason's apoplectic with that possibility.
Well, I mean, I pretend that Kansas doesn't exist.
Right,
state,
right. It's further from you there. So
yeah, it's further. And, you know, we have Illinois, which is I think it's so destitute as far as finances. Missouri could probably buy it for $50 at this point.
It's not a bad strategy, you know. Illinois' budget problems make Kansas and Missouri's budget problems seem quaint.
Very much so.
Okay, so we're almost out of time, but I want to ask each of you one more question. I want you to name one big winner and one big loser so far in this General Assembly session. Let's start with winners. Jason Rosenbaum, who's a big winner?
I think winners are our business groups that have been able to get traction on things like right to work and other things that curb the power of labor unions. And I think that the big loser is labor unions and whether they stay relevant in Missouri completely depends on how many other things pass over the session. And especially if right to work stays in effect, whether they're able to convince members that they're vital enough to where they can continue to pay dues.
As far as winners, I guess, that's a little bit tough. The people of Missouri. No,
the
winners, I guess, we'll say, you know, well, we're still going to wait and see whether he's a big winner. He did manage to with his beady little eyes talk, stop that pay raise. So I will give Governor Greitens a tentative winner slot with the asterisk that whether or not he's a big winner still depends on how the rest of the session goes.
Final word, Jason Rosenbaum?
Just one word or several words?
Between 1 and 10 words, I'd say.
Buckle up, because the second half of the legislative session is always thrilling and exciting.
I think you're just under 10. That works. Brian Lowry?
Yes.
I'll just quote a Pixies lyric. Where is my mind?
Well done. Joining us by Skype, that was Jason Rosenbaum from St. Louis Public Radio. Thanks, Jason.
Thank you.
And here in the KCUR production studio from the Kansas City Star, Brian Lowry. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
State House Blend Missouri is produced by Matt Hodapp. Hey, we want to remind you all that we are taking State House Blend Missouri on the road this week, March 30th, Thursday at 6:30 p.m. at Rock and Run in Liberty. We will be joined by Republican T.J. Berry and Democrat Mark Ellebrocht, two state representatives, and by you, we hope. Come join us for pale ale, pizza, and politics. And a live taping of State House Blend Missouri. We look forward to having you there Thursday, March 30th at 6:30 p.m. Also, remember to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts, and post a review there if you like what you hear. We're also on the NPR One app. Just search for us in Explore and tap Follow. On Twitter, I'm at PTS Brian. And if politics in Kansas are still of interest to you, Brian Lowry, some people still care about this sort of thing, you can find my colleague and co-host, Statehouse Blend Kansas host, Sam Zeff. He's at Sam Zeff. And if you have any other thoughts, send me an email. I'm at brian@kcur.org. I'm Brian Ellison. Thanks for listening.